Welcome to the Annie Jennings PR Poker Pro Podcast Series, a poker how-to podcast series featuring the greatest and most accomplished poker players in the industry. My name is Annie Jennings, host of the Poker Pro Podcast Series, and our pro today is Peter Alson, author of One of a Kind, The Rise and Fall of Stewie the Kid Unger, the world's greatest poker player, and author of another recently published book called Take Me to the River, A Wayward and Perilous Journey to the World Series of Poker. Welcome, Peter, to the Poker Pro Podcast Series.
Hi, Annie.
Well, we're happy to have you here today, especially because we want to get the inside scoop of what it's really like when you do sign up for the World Series of Poker. Recently, you did play, and you competed with more than 5,000 players vying for over $56 million in prize money. And your new book, of course, talks about your experience. The book's name is Take Me to the River, fascinating account of Peter's entire experience in his foray into trying to win the World Series of Poker. All right, so here we go. Why don't you tell us about it? Many of us dream of playing in the big one. We all want to plunk our $10,000 down, believe me. We do. The only thing that stops us is, of course, it's a lot of money. And we all hope to win our way in via the satellites, of course. So, you know, I wanted to just delve into what is it like to be part of the World Series of Poker?
Well, you know, when I played in 2005, it was actually my second time playing in the main event. I've played in other preliminary events.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, as you say, $10,000 is a lot of money. And the first time I played in it, which was in 2001, I think, I won a... back then was in the pre-internet days, so the only way you could get a seat was by playing in the live super satellites that they held at Binion's Horseshoe. And after years of trying to win one of those, I finally did win a seat that way, and played in it that way.
Well, that's wonderful. Congratulations, because
yeah,
all of us who do try to win them on the internet know how challenging that is.
It's very tough. Very, very tough. But in 2005, I had gotten this contract, this book contract, to write about playing in the World Series, and I decided that I would have to I couldn't chance getting in that way. That, I mean, I might play a satellite or two to try and win my way in on the cheap, but actually, when I got out to Vegas at the beginning of the World Series, I just decided, what the hell, I'm going to buy my way in. I won't waste any money playing super satellites. I know I'm going to play, and so I showed up at the cage window with $10,000 in my pocket, and I got to tell you, there's pushing $10,000 through this window, and $10,000 in cash, if you've never held it in your hand, it's a pretty big wad of cash.
It really is, knowing as all experienced players do, that one hand can wipe you out.
Well, knowing that one hand can wipe you out, yes. I mean, you know, so I pushed, you know, $10,000 through this window, and in return received what was essentially one of the world's most expensive lottery tickets. Particularly in 2005, when they had a then record 5,700 entries. When I had played in it in 2001, it was then by far the biggest $10,000 buy-in tournament field. It was only 631 players. So that was a lottery, but not one that seemed unwinnable. To sit down, knowing that you have to beat 5,700 other players is a different story.
Yeah.
So that was an interesting experience. I was glad I did it.
Yeah, I know. It's a wonderful accounting. I know you get into a lot of details. You also delve into the history of Las Vegas as well, history of the World Series of Poker, talking about the various locations and where it's held, and which is fascinating, too, to learn a lot about the backstory of the tournament, the backstory of some of the previous winners and players. So I found that fascinating as well, and I found it fascinating, your choice of hotel, and you know, your whole story really is very engaging, and I recommend it as a read because it's just fascinating to actually be there, and we are. Peter, you bring us, you draw us into your journey, and it's just one of the most wonderful journeys, exciting journeys for those of us who dream of playing there one day.
Yeah, well, you know, the thing is, I've been going out to the World Series initially as a journalist since the mid '80s, and so I had seen poker, you know, evolve over the years, and of course its evolution took a huge step in 2003 when Chris Moneymaker won,
mm-hmm.
and suddenly the face of the poker world was completely different. And so one of the things I wanted to do in this book was to really give a sense of what had preceded the boom and then how the boom had you know, changed that face of poker and what it meant and the ways in which it, you know, my perceptions of that were and are in some ways unique,
mm-hmm.
Because I bring that perspective that, you know, that I think a lot of people don't have. They've just come to poker recently and they really didn't have a sense of what was there before. And the other thing I wanted to do in this book is to show, I think most poker TV shows and most poker books follow only the poker stars, the stars of the poker world, the T.J. Cloutiers and the Doyle Brunsons and the Chris Fergusons and the Howard Letterers and people like that. And because I've been in and around the poker world for so long, I know people and you know, both the top level pros, but I also know some of the pros who are unknown pros, who are playing this game for a living, but are on a lower rung. They haven't gotten the public notoriety. They haven't won any of the big events yet, but they still manage to make their living at it, maybe just eking by. And so, in this book, I wanted to give some insight and show what that world is like and what it's like to be a pro on a lower rung. And I myself am an amateur, but there've been periods in my life when I've supported myself playing poker. So I also felt a kinship to these players who had made the choice that I might have made, but didn't to do it for a living.
You know, it's interesting from your perspective, as you mentioned that you've been covering these as a journalist since the mid '80s. I'm curious now about the changes that you do see occurring right now, especially in the fact that we have this new generation of poker players, the young internet players, or any internet player really. But generally, you're seeing a lot of young people winding up at these final tables and winning their way into the tournament via the satellite games, the internet satellite games. Now, having watched the newer players, and of course being very familiar with the players who've been playing for many, many years, how do you feel these young internet hotshots match up, in your opinion, to the established big name pros?
You know, I think they actually match up fairly well. These young players really were able to benefit from something that us older players never had, which is they, because of the internet, they are able to play an enormous number of hands in a fraction of the time that it would have taken us to play those same hands in playing in live cash games. And so they have accelerated their education. They're able to learn what took us older players maybe, you know, 15, 20 years to learn.
Or a lifetime in some cases.
Or a lifetime in some cases.
Right. Nothing beats experience, too.
Right. But they're getting this experience in the course of 6 months or a year. Now I still think that the older players who have seen everything, have an edge on these younger players, but But the thing about tournaments like the World Series in particular, it favors the younger player now just because of the physical stamina that is required to last through this marathon post-session.
Yes. You absolutely have to be in top physical shape. You have to work out to be able to sit there for so many hours and maintain your maintain everything, your confidence, your ability to concentrate, right, and not just say, oh, after a bad beat or something, say, oh, forget it, I'm out, and get out. You know, you really have to have a lot of reasons to stay and have them at the able to access those reasons so you don't wind up, you know, burning out early in the game. So tenacity is a big factor in making it through. How do you think Doyle Brunson would do against Chris Moneymaker today? Or should I say Chris against Doyle? But have they played a match?
I don't know if they've played a heads-up match, but, you know, Chris Moneymaker, and if it's a very nice guy and a decent poker player, is, you know, I mean, he can't hold a candle to Doyle. Doyle is really, you know, I mean, Doyle and Stewie are probably the two greatest poker players.
Really great players to watch, you know, live and in action. In Doyle's case, it would be really great. I always, whenever I get the opportunity to watch, action, I welcome the chance to watch Doyle Brunson play. Definitely. It's just
and
amazing.
I mean, you know, here he is. He is literally a living legend. There is no one like him. There's no one his age who's able to play at his level. You know, if you're a poker player, you got to love Doyle Brunson.
Oh, absolutely. And I do, by the way. Doyle, you're out there. I do love you. I want an interview, Doyle. my next phone call, you better be clear of me a ring because I really have a lot of, I don't know, I just love the game. I love everything about it, and I would love to interview Doyle, that's for sure. Well, you know what, how about some tips? You know, you've covered a lot of poker plays. I'm sure you've seen many, many bad beats. You've seen many amazing hands played. Do you want to share any of your own personal stories, or would you like to share some tips to winning poker, including how to play, right, the dreaded hand? And the reason I say dreaded is this. It's a great hand we all would love to have, right? These pocket rockets in our hole, the AA, but, sometimes they're scary to play.
Yeah, I'd happily play them every hand.
I think
the thing with
cracked
aces is that yes, you're gonna get cracked sometimes, but my own feeling about aces early in a tournament is I'll actually make a big bet with them.
Mm-hmm.
And my thinking there is that I really the kind of hands that I'm worried about calling my aces, and I related to one particular tournament I played at Foxwoods. It was a $2,500 buy-in, and it was very early on, and I had pocket aces, and I made a raise, a normal three times the blind raise, and the guy called me, and the flop came ace 3-5, and I made a bet because I like to play my hands pretty fast.
Yeah, as Doyle does too, by the way.
Right, and so I made a bet. The guy called me. The turn was a blank, and now I checked to him because I thought he might make a play at the pot, and I had flopped top set. You know, I was just trying to figure out how I was going to get his money.
Yeah,
and he made a bet, and I made a raise, and he moved in, and I called him, and he
proudly called him.
he called up. He turned up 2-4.
Oh,
and,
no.
It was a guy named Eric Hollum who actually went on to win that event.
I
had some small hand in giving him his there. But thereafter, as I say, that happened I think in the first round of the tournament. I decided that if I was gonna have my aces cracked that way, somebody was gonna have to make a big pre-flop call.
A big decision early. You got it. Yeah, so why wait? Right.
Right. So I tend to like to overbet aces.
Interesting.
Pre-flop there because hands like pocket jacks, pocket queens, pocket kings will, if you overbet, they're going to then overbet their raise and be pot committed, and you're going to get, you have a good chance of getting all their money. So I like to do that, and it also discourages hands like 2-4 from calling you.
From bothering. With a flop like that, obviously,
yeah.
You're in.
So that's one thing with aces. The other thing is that I think a very common play now with aces is to, especially early position under the gun, is to limp in with them looking for a raise so you can re-raise. The interesting aspect of that is that as common a play as this has become, people who raise you when you re-raise them are almost always going to call you. It's just weird, because I thought by now it had become such a common play that you could do that limp re-raise with rags and get people to throw pretty good hands, and they won't do it. But the pitfall of limping in there is that you may not get raised, and then you're going to see a flop, and you're not going to be able to put your opponents on hands. They haven't done anything to really define their hand, and that's an easy way to lose your stack if you're unwilling to lay down those aces. So if you're going to limp in early position with aces, you have to be willing to get away from the hand. If the flop, even if it seems like an unthreatening flop, I proceed with caution after the flop, because the one thing I'm not going to let myself do is lose my stack in an unraised pot with aces. So that's my my tip for playing them. But otherwise, I'm going to raise. I'm going to raise with them, and I'm going to play them strongly, and I'm not incapable of laying them down, but it's a hand that the thing with aces is, as they say, it's you win a small pot or lose a big pot.
Mm-hmm.
I don't agree with that.
Really?
Yeah, I think it's if you play them incorrectly, you do that. But I think change it up with aces.
Sure, and panic can set in too.
That's right. Right. You can get afraid.
You can get afraid and overbet, and you know. Though I guess one of the real secrets is knowing how to play them to the best of their ability, given the situation, so that you can make the most money.
Right.
At that given time. And that's a little challenging. You've got to be kind of advanced to know what's the right play at the right time with that particular hand. You've done a great job with us today, Peter. I really want to thank you for being here. And I'm going to ask you to come back, because it sounds to me like you've got your game down, and what I'd like to ask you is how to play some other hands.
Absolutely.
From various positions. So we can look forward to many more podcasts with Peter Olson. As you know, he's the author of One of a Kind, The Rise and Fall of Stewie the Kid Unger, the world's greatest poker player, and we just interviewed Peter a moment ago on a previous podcast that you certainly can access, and it's very interesting to find out about the life of a man who is considered the Jim Morrison of the casino. So I do recommend people do maybe go to Amazon.com and buy One of a Kind by Nolan Dalla, D-A-L-L-A, and Peter Alson, A-L-S-O-N. And, of course, Peter is also the author of Take Me to the River, A Wayward and Perilous Journey to the World Series of Poker, which is a great read. I'm telling you, it reads like fiction. This is a fabulous, fabulous book. Captured my attention. I really bought into his journey. I bought into the characters. I'm so happy that he married Alice and Eden is his little daughter. But if you read the book, you'll understand what I'm talking about, everybody. And Peter, one big question. Are you going again this year?
I'm hoping to. I'm writing another book, actually a non-poker book.
Oh, really?
But But I,
if
I can make the time, hopefully I will get there.
Because it is a commitment of time, isn't it?
It is a commitment of time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. The main event now is a 2-week commitment.
And many of us do work, right?
That's right.
I don't know what I would do
yeah.
if I ever made it in. It'd be like, yeah, but I have to run my business. Don't you people get this? But right, with 5,000 players, or what's anticipated this year, even more?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I don't know what they're anticipating this year, because obviously with the crackdown on the internet,
yeah,
there are going to be fewer internet players. But I'm not sure what the numbers will be. My guess is it'll probably be in the neighborhood of 6,000, 7,000.
Well, I'll tell you, that's another topic we can get into, is this whole internet ban that we're experiencing here in this country. But we can talk about that as that develops, and you know, maybe things will change. We'll see.
Yeah.
You know, we'll keep that in mind as a future interview coming up. But meanwhile, I just want to thank Peter for being with us today, and everyone, all of the listeners and the podcast listeners, I encourage you to check out Peter's books, One of a Kind, The Rise and Fall of Stewie the Kid Unger, and Take Me to the River, A Wayward and Perilous Journey to the World Series of Poker. Thanks again, Peter, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks so much, Annie.
My pleasure. Bye-bye for all.